Chapter 8. Lictor defeated the Portuguese in a naval engagement in September 1645. Mr. Stuyvesant has almost all the time from his first arrival up to our leaving been busy building, laying masonry, making, breaking, repairing and the like, but generally in matters of the company, and with little profit to it. For upon some things more was spent than they were worth. And though at the first he put in order the church which came into his hands very much out of repair, and shortly afterwards made a wooden wharf, both acts very serviceable and opportune, yet after this time we do not know that anything has been done, or made that is entitled to the name of a public work, though there has been income enough, as is to be seen in the statement of the yearly revenue. They have all the time been trying for more, like dropsical people. Thus in a short time very great discontent has sprung up on all sides, not only among the burghers, who had little to say, but also among the company's officers themselves, so that various protests were made by them on account of the expense and waste consequent upon unnecessary counselors, officers, servants and the like who are not known by the managers, and also on account of the monies and means which were given in common, being privately appropriated and used. But it was all in vain, there was very little or no amendment, and the greater the endeavors to help, restore and raise up everything, the worse has it been. For pride has ruled when justice dictated otherwise, just as if it were disgraceful to follow advice, and as if everything should come from one head. The fruits of this conduct can speak, and bear testimony of themselves. It has been so now so long, that every day serves the more to condemn it. Previously to the 23rd of July 1649, nothing had been done concerning weights and measures or the like, but at that time they notified the people that in August then next ensuing the matter would be regulated. The fiscal would then attend to it, which was as much as to say, would give the pigeons to drink. There is frequently much discontent and discord among the people on account of weights and measures, and as they are never inspected, they cannot be right. It is also believed that some of easy consciences have two sets of them, but we cannot affirm the fact. As to the corn measure, the company itself has always been suspected, but who dare lisp it? The payment in Zeeland, which is the currency here, has never been placed upon a good footing, although the commonalty requested it, and showed how it should be regulated, assigning numerous reasons therefore. But there is always misunderstanding and discontent, and if anything is said before the director of these matters more than pleases him, very wicked and spiteful words are returned. Those moreover whose office requires them to speak to him of such things are, if he is in no good fit, very freely berated as clowns, bear skinners, and the like. The fort under which we are to shelter ourselves, and from which as it seems all authority proceeds, lies like a molehill or a tottering wall, on which there is not one gun carriage or one piece of cannon in a suitable frame, or on a good platform. Greater than from the first it has been declared, that it should be repaired, laid in five angles, and put in royal condition. The commonalty's men have been addressed for money for the purpose, but they excused themselves on the ground, that the people were poor. Everyone, too, was discontented and feared that, if the director once had his fort to rely upon, he would be more cruel and severe. Between the two, nothing is done. He will doubtless know how to lay the blame with much circumstance upon the commonalty who are innocent, although the director wished to have the money from them, and for that purpose pretended to have an order from their high mightinesses. Had the director laid out for that purpose the fourth part of the money which was collected from the commonalty during his time, it certainly would not have fallen short, as the wine excise was expressly laid for that object. But it was sought in a thousand ways to shear the sheep, though the wool was not yet grown. In regard, then, to public works, there is little difference between Director Kieft and Director Stuyvesant, for after the church was built the former was negligent, and took personal action against those who looked him in the eye. The latter has had much more opportunity to keep public works in repair than his predecessor had, For he has had no war on his hands. He has also been far more diligent and bitter in looking up causes of prosecution against his innocent opponents than his predecessor ever was. The administration of Director Kieft in particular. Sufficient has been said of what Director Kieft did in regard to the church and its affairs, and in regard to the state, such as buildings and taxes or revenue. It remains for us to proceed to the council house and produce thence some examples, as we promised. We will, in doing so, endeavor to be brief. The council then consisted of Director Kieft and Monsieur Lamontin. The director had two votes, and Monsieur Lamontin won, and it was a high crime to appeal from their judgments. Cornelis van der Huyken sat with them as fiscal, one and Cornelis van Tienhoven as secretary, two, and whenever anything extraordinary occurred, the director allowed some, whom it pleased him, officers of the company for the most part, to be summoned in addition, but that seldom happened. Nevertheless, it gave discontent. The 12 men, and afterwards the 8, 3 had in court matters neither vote nor advice, but were chosen in view of the war and some other occurrences, to serve as cloaks and cat's paws. Otherwise they received no consideration, and were little respected, if they opposed at all the views of the director, who himself imagined, or certainly wished to make others believe, that he was sovereign, and that it was absolutely in his power to do, or refuse to do anything. He little regarded the safety of the people as the supreme law, as clearly appeared in the war, although when the spit was turned in the ashes, it was sought by cunning, and numerous certificates and petitions, to shift the blame upon others. But that happened so, because the war was carried too far, and because everyone laid the damage, and the blood which was shed to his account. Lamontin said that he had protested against it, but that it was begun against his will, and to his great regret, and that afterwards, when it was entered upon, he had helped to excuse it to the best of his ability. The secretary, Cornelius van Tienhoven, also said that he had no hand in the matter, and nothing had been done by him in regard to it except by the express orders of the director. But this was not believed. For there are those who have heard Lamontin say that, if the secretary had not brought false reports, the affair would never have happened. Less than four there are others also who know this, and everyone believes it to be so, and indeed it has plausibility. Fiscal van der Huygens was not trusted on account of his drinking, wherein all his science consists. He had also no experience here, and in the beginning frequently denounced the war as being against his will, so that the blame rests, and must rest only upon the director and secretary Tienhoven. The director was entrusted with the highest authority, and if anybody advised him to the land's ruin, he was not bound to follow the advice and afterwards endeavor to shift the burden from his own neck upon the people, who however excuse themselves, although in our judgment they are not all entirely innocent. The cause of this war we conceive to have been the exacting of the contribution, for which the director said he had the order of the managers. 5 and his own ungovernable passions, which showed themselves principally in private. But there are friends whom this business intimately concerns, and as they have already undertaken it, we will leave the matter with them, and proceed to cite one or two instances disclosing the aspiration after sovereignty. Passing by many cases for the sake of brevity, we have that of one Francis Doughty, an English minister, and of Arnoldus van Herdenberch, a free merchant. But as both these cases appear likely to come before their high mightinesses at full length, we will merely give a summary of them. This minister, Francis Doughty, during the first troubles in England, in order to escape them, came to New England. Less than 6, but he found that he might, in conformity with the Dutch Reformation, have freedom of conscience, which, contrary to his expectation, he missed in New England. He betook himself to the protection of the Dutch. An absolute crown brief 7 with the privileges allowed to a colony, was granted to him by the director. He had strengthened his settlement in the course of 1 year by the addition of several families, But the war coming on, they were driven from their lands with the loss of some men and many cattle, besides almost all their houses, and what other property they had. They afterwards returned and remained a while, but consuming more than they were able to raise, they came to the Manathans, where all the fugitives sojourned at that time, and their master Dadi officiated as a minister. After the flame of war was out and the peace was concluded, but in such a manner that no one much relied upon it, some of the people again returned to their lands. The director would have been glad, in order that all things should be completely restored, if it had pleased this man likewise to go back upon his land. But inasmuch as the peace was doubtful, and he had not wherewith to begin, Master Dadi was in no haste. He went, however, some time afterwards, and dwelt there half a year, but again left it. As peace was made, and in hope that some others would make a village there, a suit was brought against the minister, and carried on so far, that his land was confiscated. Master Dadi, feeling himself aggrieved, appealed from the sentence. The director answered, his sentence could not be appealed from, but must prevail absolutely, and caused the minister for that remark to be imprisoned 24 hours, and then to pay 25 guilders. We have always considered this an act of tyranny, and regarded it as a token of sovereignty. The matter of Arnoldus van Herdenbrich was very like it in its termination. After Zegerthunus was murdered by the Indians in the Barragut, Aidan the Yodid returned to the Manathans. Arnoldus van Hardenberg was with two others appointed by the director and council curators over the estate, and the yacht was searched. Some goods were found in it which were not entered, whereupon the fiscal went to law with the curators, and claimed that the goods were confiscable to the company. The curators resisted, and gave Herdenbrich charge of the matter. After some proceedings the goods were condemned. As he found himself now aggrieved in behalf of the common owners, he appealed to such judges as they should choose for the purpose. The same game was then played over again. It was a high crime. The fiscal made great pretensions and a sentence was passed, whereof the contents read thus. Having seen the written complaint of the fiscal van der Huygens against Arnoldus van Hardenbrich in relation to appealing from our sentence, dated the 28th April last past, as appears by the signature of the before-named senior A. van Hardenbrich, from which sentence no appeal can be had, as is proven to him by the States General and His Highness of Orange. Therefore the Director General and Council of New Netherland, regarding the dangerous consequences tending to injure the supreme authority of this land's magistracy, condemn the before named Arnold van Herdenbrich to pay forthwith a fine of 25 guilders, or to be imprisoned until the penalty be paid, as an example to others. Now, if one know the lion from his paw, he can see that these people do not spare the name of their high mightinesses, His Highness of Orange, the honor of the magistrates, nor the words, dangerous consequences, an example to others, and other such words, to play their own parts therewith. We have therefore placed this act by the side of that which was committed against the minister Dadi. Many more similar cases would be found in the record, if other things were always rightly inserted in it, which is very doubtful, the contrary sometimes being observed. It appears then sufficiently that everything has gone on rather strangely. And with this, we will leave the subject and pass on to the government of Director Stuyvesant, with a single word, however, touching the sinister proviso incorporated in the ground briefs, as the consequences may thence be very well understood. Absolute grants were made to the people by the ground briefs, and when they thought that everything was right, and that they were masters of their own possessions, the ground briefs were demanded from them again upon pretense that there was something forgotten in them, but that was not it. They thought they had incommoded themselves in giving them, and therefore a proviso was added at the end of the ground brief, and it was signed anew, which proviso directly conflicts with the ground brief, so that in one and the same ground brief is a contradiction without chance of agreement, for it reads thus in the old briefs. Andy taken possession the land, and the valleys appertaining of old thereto, and the proviso says, no valley to be used before the company, all which could well enough be used, and the company have a competency. In the ground briefs is contained also another provision, which is usually inserted, and sticks in the bosom of every one. To wit, that they must submit themselves to all taxes which the council has made or shall make. Less than 9 these impositions can be continued in infinitum, and have already been enforced against several inhabitants. Others also are discouraged from undertaking anything on such terms. One Cornelis van der Huygens was shout fiscal, sheriff, and public prosecutor of New Netherland from 1639 to 1645. He was drowned in the wreck of the Princess in 1647, along with Kieft. Two Cornelis van Tienhoven was a figure of much importance in New Netherland history. An Utrecht man, he came out as bookkeeper in 1633, and served in that capacity under Van Twiller. In 1638, at the beginning of Kieft's administration, he was made provincial secretary, and continued in that office under Stuyvesant, supporting with much shrewdness and industry the measures of the administration. His endeavors to counteract this representation of the commonalty of New Netherland are described in the introduction, and are exhibited in the piece which follows. 3 of the 12 men were representatives chosen at the request of Kieft, to advise respecting war against the Wakwazjeeks, by an assembly of heads of families convened in August, 1641. They counseled delay, but finally, in January, 1642, consented to war. When they proceeded to demand reforms, especially popular representation in the council, Kieft dissolved them. After the Indian outbreak of August, 1643, the 8 men were elected, also at the instance of Kieft, and did their part in the management of the ensuing warfare, but they also, in the autumns of 1643 and 1644, protested to the West India Company and the States General against Kieft's misgovernment, and demanded his recall. For this is intended to connect Kieft's massacre of the refugee Tappans at Pavonia, February 25-26, 1643, with a previous reconnaissance of their position by Van Tienhoven. 5 demand of tribute which Kieft made of the River Indians in 1639 and 1640. 6 Reverend Francis Doughty, Adrian van der Donck's father-in-law, came to Massachusetts in 1637. But was forced to depart on account of heresies respecting baptism. He is reputed one of the first, if not the first, Presbyterian ministers in America. Further details regarding him, from an unfriendly pen, may be seen in Van Tienhoven's reply, post. The conditions on which he and his associates settled at Mesbath, Newtown, may be seen in N. Y.Y. Colonel. Doc. Z. 8. The patent, in O'Callaghan's History of New Netherland, I 425. 7 Conveyance. 8 Shrewsbury Inlet. 9 Mr. Murphy cites the clause, from a ground brief or patent issued in 1639. After describing the land conveyed, it is declared to be, upon the express condition and stipulation, that the said A. B. B. and his assigns, shall acknowledge the noble lords managers aforesaid as their masters and patroons under the sovereignty of the high and mighty Lord States General, and shall be obedient to the director and council here, as all good citizens are bound to be, submitting themselves to all such taxes and imposts as have been or may be, hereafter, imposed by the noble lords. The administration of Director Stuyvesant in particular, we wish much we were already through with this administration, for it has grieved us, and we know ourselves powerless. Nevertheless we will begin, and as we have already spoken of the public property, ecclesiastical and civil, we will consider how it is in regard to the administration of justice, and giving decisions between man and man. And first, to point as with a finger at the manners of the director and council. As regards the director, from his first arrival to this time, his manner in court has been to treat with violence, dispute with or harass one of the two parties, not as becomes a judge, but as a zealous advocate, which has given great discontent to everyone, and with some it has gone so far, and has affected so much, that many of them dare bring no matter before the court, if they do not stand well or tolerably so with the director. For whoever has him opposed, has as much as the sun and moon against him. Though he has himself appointed many of the counselors, and placed them under obligation to him, and some pretend that he can overpower the rest by plurality of votes, he frequently puts his opinion in writing, and that so fully, that it covers several pages, and then he adds verbally, "Monsieur, this is my advice, if anyone has aught to say against it, let him speak." If then anyone rises to make objection, which is not easily done, though it be well grounded, his honor bursts out immediately in fury and makes such gestures, that it is frightful. Yea, he rails out frequently at the counselors for this thing and the other, with ugly words which would better suit the fish market than the council chamber. And if this be all endured, his honor will not rest, yet unless he has his will. To demonstrate this by examples and proof, though easily done, would nevertheless detain us too long. But we all say and affirm that this has been his common practice from the first and still daily continues. And this is the condition and nature of things in the council on the part of the director, who is its head and president. Let us now briefly speak of the councillors individually. The vice director, Lubbert van Dinklagen, one has for a long time on various occasions shown great dissatisfaction about many different matters, and has protested against the director and his appointed counselors, but only lately, and after some others made resistance. He was, before this, so influenced by fear, that he durst venture, to take no chances against the director, but had to let many things pass by and to submit to them. He declared afterwards, that he had great objections to them, because they were not just, but he saw no other way to have peace, as the director said even in the council, that he would treat him worse than Wouter van Twiller had ever done, if he were not willing to conform to his wishes. This man then is overruled. Let us proceed farther. Monsieur Lamontin had been in the council in Kieft's time, and was then very much suspected by many. He had no commission from the fatherland, was driven by the war from his farm, is also very much indebted to the company, and therefore is compelled to dissemble. But it is sufficiently known from himself that he is not pleased, and is opposed to the administration. Brian Newton, too lieutenant of the soldiers, is the next. This man is afraid of the director, and regards him as his benefactor. Besides being very simple, and inexperienced in law, he does not understand our Dutch language, so that he is scarcely capable of refuting the long-written opinions, but must and will say yes. Sometimes the commissary, Adrian Kesser, is admitted into the council, who came here as secretary. This man has not forgotten much law, but says that he lets God's water run over God's field. He cannot and dares not say anything, for so much can be said against him, that it is best that he should be silent. The captains of the ships, when they are ashore, have a vote in the council, as Ilmer Thomasson, and Paulus Leonardson, three who was made equipment master upon his first arrival, and who has always had a seat in the council, but is still a free man. What knowledge these people, who all their lives sail on the sea, and are brought up to ship work, have of law matters, and of farmers' disputes any intelligent man can imagine. Besides, the director himself considers them so guilty, that they dare not accuse others, as will appear from this passage at Curacao, before the director ever saw New Netherland. As they were discoursing about the price of carracks, the director said to the minister and others, "Domin Johannes, for I thought that I had brought honest shipmasters with me, but I find that I have brought a set of thieves." And this was repeated to these counselors, especially to the equipment master, for Captain Ilmer was most of the time at sea. They have let it pass unnoticed a proof that they were guilty. But they have not fared badly, For though Paulus Lenertsen has small wages, he has built a better dwelling house here than anybody else. How this has happened is mysterious to us. For though the director has knowledge of these matters, he nevertheless keeps quiet when Paulus Lenertsen begins to make objections, which he does not easily do for anyone else, which causes suspicion in the minds of many. There remains to complete this court bench, the secretary and the fiscal, Hendrik van Dijk, five who had previously been an ensign bearer. Director Stuyvesant has kept him 29 months out of the meetings of the council, for the reason among others which his honor assigned, that he cannot keep secret, but will make public, what is there resolved. He also frequently declared that he was a villain, a scoundrel, a thief and the like. All this is well known to the fiscal, who dares not against him take the right course, and in our judgment it is not advisable for him to do so, for the director is utterly insufferable in word and deed. What shall we say of a man whose head is troubled, and has a screw loose, especially when, as often happens, he has been drinking? To conclude, there is the secretary, Cornelius van Tienhoven. Of this man very much could be said, and more than we are able, but we shall select here and there a little for the sake of brevity. He is cautious, subtle, intelligent and sharp-witted, good gifts, when they are well used. He is one of those who have been longest in the country, and every circumstance is well known to him, in regard both to the Christians and the Indians. With the Indians, moreover, he has run about the same as an Indian, with a little covering, and a small patch in front, from lust after the prostitutes to whom he has always been mightily inclined, and with whom he has had so much to do that no punishment or threats of the director can drive him from them. He is extremely expert in dissimulation. He pretends himself that he bites when asleep, and that he shows externally the most friendship towards those whom he most hates. He gives everyone who has any business with him which scarcely anyone can avoid good answers and promises of assistance, yet rarely helps anybody but his friends, but twists continually, and shuffles from one side to the other. In his words and conduct he is shrewd, false, deceitful and given to lying, promising everyone, and when it comes to perform, at home to no one. The origin of the war was ascribed principally to him, together with some of his friends. In consequence of his false reports and lies, the director was led into it, as is believed, and declared both by the honest Indians and Christians. Now, if the voice of the people, according to the maxim, be the voice of God, one can with truth say scarcely anything good of this man or omit anything bad. The whole country, save the director and his party, cries out against him bitterly, as a villain, murderer and traitor, and that he must leave the country, or there will be no peace with the Indians. Director Stuyvesant was, at first and afterwards, well admonished of this. But he has nevertheless kept him in office, and allowed him to do so much, that all things go according to his wishes, more than if he were president. Yea, he also says, that he is well contented to have him in his service, but that stone does not yet rest. We firmly believe, that he misleads him in many things, so that he does many bad things which he otherwise would not do. In a word, that he is an indirect cause of his ruin and dislike in the country. But it seems that the director can or will not see it, for when it was represented to him by some persons he gave it no consideration. It has been contrived to disguise and manage matters so that in the fatherland, where the truth can be freely spoken, nobody would be able to molest him in order to discover the truth. We do not attempt it. Having established the powers of the council, it is easy to understand that the right people clung by each other in order to maintain the imaginary sovereignty and to give a gloss to the whole business. 9 men were chosen to represent the whole commonalty, and commissions and instructions were given that whatever these men should do should be the act of the whole commonalty. Less than 6, and so in fact it was, as long as it corresponded with the wishes and views of the director. In such cases they represented the whole commonalty, But when it did not so correspond, they were then clowns, usurers, rebels and the like. But to understand this properly, it will be best briefly to state all things chronologically, as they have happened during his administration, and in what manner those who have sought the good of the country have been treated with injustice. 1. Lubbertus van Dinklagen, Doctor of Laws, was sent out as Schout-Fiscal of New Netherland in 1634, quarreled with Van Twiller, and was sent back by him in 1636. In 1644 he was provisionally appointed as Kieft's successor, but Stuyvesant was finally made director, and Van Dinklagen went out with him as vice-director and second member of the council. He opposed some of Stuyvesant's arbitrary acts, supplied the three bearers of this representation with letters of credence to the States General, was expelled from the council by Stuyvesant in 1651, and died in 1657 or 1658. 2. An Englishman who had served under the company several years at Curacao. 3. Aylmer said the equals a Thelmer. Thomason was skipper of the Great Jared in 1647, when Stuyvesant made him company's storekeeper and second in military command. In 1649 and 1650, of the Falcon, Paulus Leendertsen van der Grift was captain in the West India Company's service from at least 1644. In 1647 Stuyvesant made him superintendent of naval equipment. In the first municipal government of New Amsterdam, 1653, he was made a sheepen magistrate and councillor, later a burgomaster. 4. Reverend Johannes Bacchus, minister for the company at Curacao from 1642 to 1647, was transferred to Amsterdam when Stuyvesant came out, in order to fill the vacancy left by Reverend Everardus Bogardus, minister at Manhattan from 1633 to 1647, who, after long quarreling with Kieft, had gone home in the same ship with him, the ill-fated princess. 5. Ensign Hendrik van Dyck came out in 1640 as commander of the militia, again with Stuyvesant in 1647 as Schout-Fiscal. In 1652 Stuyvesant removed him from that office. His defense of his official career, a valuable document, may be seen in N.Y.Y. Colonel. Doc. I. 491-513. 6. C.E. Introduction. His first arrival for what passed on the voyage is not for us to speak of was like a peacock, with great state and pomp. The declaration of his honor, that he wished to stay here only 3 years, with other haughty expressions, caused Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.